We are Two Guys Gaming. Welcome. As always, even though we are under the Two Generations Gaming banner, this is One Guy Reading. Whether you meant to or not, you found Noob's Book Club. I'm Sean, Noob of All Trades. In this series, I am reading and reacting to Ready Player One, the novel by Ernest Cline. In this episode, I'm going to be recapping and reacting to Chapters 10, 11, and 12. Chapter 10. Wade makes his way back through the tomb. Upon exiting, he receives the messages waiting prompt. No communications in the tomb to prevent help during the trial. H calls while he deletes all the previous attempts that H made to contact. He considers letting his friend swing a bit more, but responds with a short text to A, let him know he's okay, and B, that he'll call back when able. We get more on the geography of Halliday's homeworld. He created 256 identical copies of the neighborhood. Wade picks one and goes. The place looks exactly as you'd suspect. Think a conglomeration of Footloose, John Cougar, Mellencamp. Was he even John Cougar then? Muscle cars and under a dollar gasoline. Some of you younger listeners will hit me with the quote-unquote, okay grandpa, let you get your back to bed meme. While traveling to the house, Artemis pings the leaderboard. By virtue of quote-unquote first, he has a 1,000-point lead on her. Once in the house, it looks exactly as I envisioned it earlier. I'll bet Cline wanted you all to Google quote-unquote vintage 80s rec room to show you. Halliday has a 2600. Pitfall, parenthetically, not pivotal yet, gets name checked along with ET and others. Get your ET hate out of here. True gamers, parenthetically, like me, played that piece of shit until we beat it. More about gatekeeping later. We also get Real Genius, War Games, Tron, Pink Floyd, Devo, and Rush mentions as posters on the wall. Then, finally, the machine of the hour, that good old TRS-80. 16K of RAM. 16K. This monstrosity has 1/385,000th of the RAM that my phone currently possesses. But before we move on, I forgot to mention the obligatory bipolar mom and alcoholic father. He really did grow up in the 80s. But back to the story. He boots the computer, then does what everyone does when faced with that basic prompt. Types hello and receives a syntax error. It's print, quote, hello, quote, noob, 10, print, hello, enter, 20, go to 10, if you want to get spicy with it. Yes, I am that old. Wade plays through Doggerath, taking some time to get used to the nuance of the game again. The ability to save his game, because it's on a tape drive, gives him the freedom to take his time and eventually settle into a rhythm and beat the game. The gate opens behind the War Games poster. Yet, what happens next surprised me. Hey, I walked the track at soccer while I listened to Marin and read this, so there's a chance that I may have skimmed parts. Regardless, Wade enters the gate, and so do we. He plays through a simulation of the movie War Games. Points for getting dialogue and actions right. Penalty for not. Yeah, that's it. Thankfully, Cline doesn't recap the whole movie, but he gives solvent plot points and, spoiler alert, the ending. Another riddle greets him upon success. The captain conceals the jade key in a dwelling long neglected, but you can only blow the whistle once the trophies are all collected. He transports back to Ludus, logs off, and then crashes to sleep. He dreams a dream of being assaulted by Sixers and other Gunter gangs while holding an egg. It doesn't take Freud to figure that one out. Thank goodness, because the dream has nothing to do with Wade's mom. Chapter 12. He wakes, then checks the Oasis to verify that the rest was not a dream. Artemis, just behind with the gate done, and some douchebag talking head confirm it all once again. Wade flips the channel and catches Ogden and Morrow on another station. Morrow answers how excited he is that some folks finally cracked the first couple of hints. He shrugs when asked if Wade and Artemis are working together, warns them both to remain anonymous, and even avoid any contact with the media, even in the Oasis. He gets in a dig by calling the media vultures. The interview quickly goes downhill from there. After surmising that the scoreboard will quickly fill, he reminds everyone that the Sixers, especially, will stop at nothing to get the Oasis. Use every dirty trick, he says. They intend to subvert the intent of Halliday and exploit loopholes in the game. The reporter reminds Ogden that IOI owns the network. Morrow presses forward. Of course they do. They own everything. Even you. Cut me off before I say more. So they do. This interaction leads Wade down a rabbit hole of Ogden's history, both with Halliday, but mostly without. We learn of Ogden's girlfriend, Kira Underwood, described as the quote-unquote quintessential geek girl. I winced a little bit at that, parenthetically. Obsessed with the same thing as the geek boys. She joins the D&D group as the only female. So all the guys crushed on her, of course. She was the one who coined Anorak, we learn. When she needed to return to London, parenthetically, as a foreign exchange student, she and Ogden start dating. They keep in touch via email and BBS. After graduating, she moves back to the States, they marry, and she starts working for Gregarious Games as art director. Morrow leaves in 2020 for quote-unquote personal reasons, but reveals that he disagreed with the direction of the company and the prevalence of the Oasis. Everyone fiddles while the whole world burns. They start an educational gaming company. Wade mentions how much he enjoys their games and how they were really his first teachers. She dies in a car accident very close to their home. Morrow keeps running their company. Deep in the rabbit hole, Wade watches a press conference Ogden held shortly after Halliday's death and the announcement of the contest. The press conference offers no new answers that I can see, just a way to reinforce Morrow's character. Maybe there's something in there that I'm missing. It might be something that goes with the clue. Who knows? He checks his messages. 2 million new messages, of which he only cares about two. Another from H and one from Artemis. He opens the message from H first and then finally calls his friend. They go back and forth about Wade's success. Eventually, H reveals his location in front of the Tomb of Horrors. Wade wonders out loud. H simply responds that he followed the clues that Wade unknowingly left. By virtue of being poor, he knew it had to be near or on Ludus. They go back and forth again in friendly banter, before arriving at the uncomfortable realization that IROC will blow up everyone's spot. Nothing to do but prepare for the inevitable. Wade leaves H to combat the tomb, dropping the huge hint about Joust, and then checks the message from Artemis. She congratulates him on the success, thanks him for the help with Joust, and commiserates that she'd like to have played the female part in war games. She can't figure out the new riddle, and shit talks him that she's coming for that number one spot. He responds in kind, then tries to figure out the riddle, but can only think about Artemis and his feelings for her. And now for my reaction. My 11-year-old fandom self meets his first major test after getting the hooks. I never played Daggeroth, but it sounds like a fun game to try, and it gives me an idea for a series of YouTube videos. I have at least a couple of weeks to try to bring it all together and make it happen. So stay tuned for possibly that. Also, I think I mentioned previously that the 80s are a shit decade. My oldest and I like, parenthetically, well, hate like, to play the game 7 Degrees of Ronald Reagan is the Devil. We try to figure out if we can trace the shitty stuff happening today back to Ronald Reagan. The other day at dinner, my wife said, "Let me guess, Ronald Reagan?" I don't know how, but... And we both excitedly went into our explanation of how that shitty thing got worse because Ronald Reagan is the devil. So, when Klein describes the 80s planet, I have mixed feelings. I enjoy the pop culture, but the rest of it can rot in the bowels of history. That part about the mentally ill mom and alcoholic abusive dad hits. Okay, I told you. About to get a bit on the therapy wagon here. I will put in the notes when to skip and the timestamp. I started the week by texting my usual rant to my wife about how much I hate work. I went off. Like how I know that most people hate their jobs, but I hate everything about this job. The social interaction, the contempt and disrespect by society in general, the unpaid overtime and extra trauma inflicted by COVID. My brain turned over all of this for a day. Then I got my summative evaluation. While I knew that some of It is copy and pasted. Parenthetically, my supervisor told me, I still nearly cried at how good it went. It got me thinking about my first teaching jobs, where I felt like things were going well, until they didn't, is always how I put it. Then I got a job teaching college, and I thought that I just liked teaching college more, which I did. But a lot of my hatred for the other jobs stems from all of the trauma of a bully, quote-unquote, important parent, that's how it was put at the time, and a bully principal. I put that together with something I read slash heard about repeated trauma, parenthetically every fucking day in my case, constantly triggering the flight or fight response. And I can attest that that's goddamn exhausting. So I texted with my brother because he publicly wrestles with some of his demons. I asked him if he went to therapy. Our oldest has, and it helped him immensely. Me? I tough it out. I tough it out and try to figure things out on my own. Well, my brother doesn't go to therapy either. We went back and forth about my epiphany, some family stuff, and then I let him go back to being dad. Back at Marhar, healing this wound. Who says you can't go home again? What does all of this have to do with the 80s? Well, during our conversation, my brother said something along the lines of, quote-unquote, Mom knocked Dad off the pedestal. In the case of our dad, almost literally, he spoke and advocated for HIV/AIDS education. Without going into it too much, he also hit us when we were younger. He didn't drink, because AZT, and stopped when we got older, but the legacy was there. Also, I talked a little on my Instagram the other day and mentioned it to a student today about a principal at my elementary school who terrorized kids. I talked about it in one of my classes a few weeks ago that they paddled us in middle school, and the students looked horrified, as they rightly should. But we normalized this abuse as just the way things are. Then we took that trauma and abuse with us into the workplace. Shithead bosses who terrorize and abuse their employees are quote-unquote good bosses, and they get the quote-unquote most out of their workers. Now that we can get together and share these experiences, we see how fucked up they are and can work to change this toxic bullshit. Okay, therapy over. So, in at least one way, I agree with Ogden Morrow. Initially, he thought the Oasis could be a good thing, and I remember that as the internet first became ubiquitous, I heralded it as a new golden age of knowledge and society. As I now say, so far, that hasn't panned out. Morrow saw much of the same with the Oasis, as I just mentioned. But, even so, where he left his company over it, I still see glimmers of hope. I am an optimist. I think the good can win. We just need to share and mobilize and make sure the dicks don't win. I have faith in us. And now for my usual response to the critics and the criticism. We saw some of the quote-unquote male gaze in action last chapter. We see some again in this one. I said earlier that I winced a bit when they described her as the quote-unquote quintessential geek girl. It does feel a little different now, after the experience of Gamergate and the fallout for women from that. On the other hand, I watched women grow and flourish in my D&D club at school. Yes, I get it. My anecdotal and circumstantial evidence ultimately proves nothing. I'm simply saying that safe places still exist for women to play and enjoy these games too. We as men need to support and help to cultivate them. Hey, like I said, hopeless optimist. And that brings me to the part where I now defend the book. I understand this opens me up to accusations of quote-unquote white knighting. Hey, as I will discuss, it's the internet. No way to escape criticism of one form or another. I can't remember how I came across the accusations of gatekeeping. It might have simply been in the context of Gamergate or the response to the actual book. I don't remember. Honestly, if it is the latter, then I don't think people understand gatekeeping, because I feel like this book goes out of its way to explain things enough for people to understand so that they can go to Google the rest if they want. I mean, like I say, because it's the internet and you can't escape criticism, like I said, some might say the book feels condescending in parts with how much it explains. Look, I get it. Nerd culture has many gatekeepers. Hell, some communities even try to gatekeep inside the gate. It's gates all the way down. I think I already gave my thoughts, but if you're joining me for the first time, here goes. I don't understand the phenomenon. Literally nobody cares who saw what first before it got popular. There is no quote-unquote first prize. Not in the comments, not in real life. If you got there first and someone struggles to keep up, help them out. Educate them. Point them in the right direction. Let me Google that for you isn't helpful. They're clearly trying to open a dialogue with you about something you supposedly love. Have the damn dialogue. Because why wouldn't you want more people around to talk about those things you love. At worst, they don't become a fan, but maybe they do. Now you have another perspective in the conversation. Welcome that perspective. Learn from it. Cultivate and grow the community. Stop being such a miserable so-and-so. This book, I think, does much of that from what I've seen so far. So if we have new nerds or nerd enthusiasts because of this book, I applaud the effort. It's all I ever wanted Two Generations Gaming to be. Alas, we just became a weird little corner of the internet where I talk to myself and sometimes a couple of other people. Hey, there's still time to make it happen. Speaking of all that, if you haven't, you can find us at www.twoguysgaming.net. I know we're Two Generations Gaming. Initially, we were Two Guys Gaming. Then I wanted my kids to be involved, so I called us Two Generations Gaming. Ultimately, it's just me, so it's really one guy gaming, but that's okay. I kept the moniker just to remember what maybe could have been. On the website, we have articles. I'm doing a review of the April 2023 comics. I'm a bit behind on comics, so the reviews are a little bit shaky this month, but they'll be back next month in their full glory. They have links to our socials, including our YouTube, where there's videos, of course, because it's YouTube. One of the video series is me playing through an RPG calendar, which I stopped doing because things got busy, but now I picked it back up. I actually have one of the weeks that I've recorded. I just have to edit it and post it, and then I'm going to try to record another week today and try to get that up and posted. As always, thanks for listening. I kept my schedule this week, Tuesday, Thursday. Next episode is supposed to be on Sunday with chapters 13, 14, and 15. I will talk to you then. Bye, guys.
We are...